Welcome to the official Leverage Redemption After Show, a very distinctive podcast. I am Yael Teagle. I'm joined, as always, by Felicia Michelle.
Hey, guys, and choo-choo! What are we talking about today, Yael?
We are talking about Season 1, Episode 14, The Great Train Job.
Choo-choo!
We have so much to talk about this week.
I know, there's a ton. We have an amazing exclusive interviews, plus the games, and of course, we had to involve the fans, right, Yael? Tell them what we're showing them.
We have fan art, and we got some of your questions sent in that we are going to ask the cast from you. We are so excited to hear what they say. But first, let's head into the studio and talk about this episode. I'm so excited to talk about this episode. It is definitely one of my favorites for the second half of the season. What did you think?
I'm going to guess why it's one of your favorites in a second. I loved it all. You know, I live for, an aristocratic type of affluent moment that's really not as popping as they think it is. I live for someone who thinks they're so smart, looking so stupid. I live for public embarrassment when it's deserved. When it's not deserved, I don't like it.
I see.
Yeah, but if it's deserved... Yeah, you need to be humiliated in front of everyone.
Oh, interesting.
And that's what happened to him.
I like what you like.
You like what I like?
I like what you like.
And I like what you like, too, because I know what you like.
What do I like?
We got to see Brianna, you know, get her flirt on.
Yeah,
and,
we did.
And be so, like, awkward with it.
Those are just designs used to replant forests ravaged by wildfire. It's like they carry and they drop seedlings in their nutrient packs to give them a greater chance.
Take root.
Look,
it was cute.
We know that I'm a shipper. I love a ship. I'm all about Brianna and Emily. The question is, what is the ship name? Bremily?
That sounds like someone's actual name.
I like Bremily, actually. Emilana?
No, that's, nope. That sounds like an ice cream flavor.
All right. Well, I'm never good at naming ships, but I'm all aboard this one. So if you're a shipper, I'm ready to hear the names for this ship.
We saw it. And this is another one of those episodes where, like, someone's a good person, but they're villain adjacent.
Yes. It reminded me very much of Melanie from the Unwellness Job, because she's working for this big evil person and they mean well. We have two characters who mean well and want to...
And are actually the brains.
Are the brains. Absolutely. It's, again, like Carter and Cardozar. Interesting. These
so
power
maybe
dynamics.
The evil geniuses aren't that genius. Maybe
right.
They're just evil.
Yeah. They seem to need someone smarter than them to do all the smart stuff.
Well, it's also back again to that confirmation bias. People want to believe the thing more than they want to believe that it's not. They want to believe what they see. They want to trust their sight, right?
Mm.
And she's just trusting the person who's in charge of her company, although she's making all these amazing designs and plans, and she has all this innovation inside of her and excitement, but she just is trusting, way too trusting.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, I mean, you brought it up. Let's talk about the flirting and how adorable it is.
She's like, you want to see my drones? Do you want to see my drones? And I felt that because it's very, she was like, I have to do this, because remember, she already, you know, spotted her and thought that she was, you know, was enamored with her. And then now she's a part of our con. Like,
right.
It really threw Brianna off. You could tell it like, just took her off her square.
But what I love is at the end when we see them both just being themselves, and they're both just awkward and adorable and just geeky and geeking out together, and it's like so beautiful.
No, it is. I felt really bad for Brianna, because I feel like she was like, this is very genuine for me, and I have to stay in character, and at what point do I break character, because that was necessary, because I like this girl, maybe not like I love her, but I like her as a person. I like talking to her.
They
I
just
have affection.
Met.
Yeah,
love
maybe
is,
not love. Yeah,
love
maybe
is.
Not like love. What I'm saying is that she cared enough about her as a person to break out of character.
Yeah.
To come out of the con and be like, look, girl, I need you to open your eyes. She tried subtly to tell her so many times, but she didn't get it.
Look, I think Bremily is relationship goals right there. It's beautiful.
Sorry,
let's go back to the rest of the episode.
But why? Yeah, I know. And that's what you love. It's all fine. We can get out the way. Where is Harry just pulling out hazmat suits? Like, where do you just...
I love that he has everything he needs in the car. It reminds me of...
The Barney bag. Yeah, I remember Barney used to have all that stuff in a bag and he'd take it out and you could make a bunch of stuff with it. And you're like, what's in there?
Like a Mary Poppins bag.
Okay. Well, Barney has a similar kind of vibe.
I see. Yeah. All right. Harry Wilson, Barney, Mary Poppins, they're all in the same vein. He had a car. He had a Mary Poppins car.
Yeah.
And I love it. It makes, you know, I feel like he would talk about how he needed these for all the cases. He had to do the testing for his cases. So he was using these tools for evil, and now he's using his tools for good.
I know Elliot's face when he's like, what? He's like, yeah, you might want to zip. You might want to go ahead right. and put this on.
Yeah, his knowledge of cobalt poisoning is interesting.
Whoa. What are you doing? You can't just dig into that. We got to test all this first. What is all this stuff?
Well, you remember that beer case I told you about a couple years ago? I started getting kind of interested in all the stuff that ends up in what we eat and what we drink, so I started doing a little research. I ordered some things online, ended up on some pretty strange mailing lists, I can tell you that.
Well, I mean, because he worked for really horrible people right. who probably dumped, you know, it's crazy. Again, we see these twists and turns, and we see this amazing couple who have a beautiful farm. Shout outs to farmers because we need farmers.
James and Leon.
We need farmers. And we see and that this is like land that's been in their family. This is very important. But they're getting gay bashed. Like they're getting harassed. And the food that they're eating is being poisoned.
Yep.
Purposefully.
Right.
By somebody with a horrible mustache. Horrible mustache. Horrible. Mustache. I didn't like it on him.
Okay. I will say what's interesting is that this episode, it reminded me a lot of The Hurricane Job in that it starts off with a lot happening and I was confused until it all tied together.
For
and
sure.
I think that was really interesting with the team is that they felt the same way, right? This James and Leon, they had the blight, so they weren't making food. There was a hate crime. And then all of a sudden they had alcoholic cardiomyopathy. This is, all of these things seem so arbitrary, but they're all tied together, and it brings us to our big bad, who is Blake Whitcomb, and he is what ties it together. And I like that our team was like, this guy is literally trying to save the planet. He's trying to build this plane that's going to save the planet. What does he have to do with a hate crime? And then, oh, he's awful.
He's horrible.
Yeah, I really enjoyed, because I, as a viewer, was not putting any of it together. I was like, but what does that have to do with, what does that have to do? And what do any of these have to do with anything? So I really love the way it all seamlessly tied together in a way that I did not see coming.
It's crazy. Like you choose to exploit the energy crisis to make more money of all these affluent people in there.
Right.
And really this is nothing but, you know, it's a dud. And I looked at it, I'm like, if this was the real world and I looked at that, I'd be like, yeah, right. Yeah, right. Let me see. You know, like how Sophie challenged. I'm like, oh no, let's see it now.
Right.
Let's do it now. But what's going on right now? But how are you doing that? There's no answers because it doesn't exist.
Speaking of Sophie, she had a Mary Poppins bag. What was it? She had a whole bunch of different characters in one bag.
I mean, she is the grifter of all grifters. If Stella's the GOAT, say Stella's Michael Jordan, we'll say that Sophie's LeBron James, right? Okay. So
you're talking to me about sports.
I know. I'm sorry. The viewers will understand what I'm saying.
Everyone else will get it.
Yeah.
Cool.
but so, of course, she would. Like, she's Sophie. Like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't she have? I wish I had a little bag, you know, with all my little stuff.
With all the wigs and the costumes. The costume and the wig and the character choice was amazing. And it was just so nicely done. And then we also had the Mounties / Bachelorette party.
So, okay.
Talk to me.
When I heard the woo, I was like, oh, gosh. And I think we watched these episodes together. We both were like, oh, Bachelorette party. Because, like, I mean, we've all run into a Bachelorette party. Some are cool. Some are not that cool.
It's really fun when you're in the Bachelorette party.
But it could be slightly known to other people who aren't necessarily
in
there.
Everyone else, yeah.
But the funny thing is, like, no, it's Mounties. I was like, Mounties? Ah!
No, I have to go to the bachelorette party. They're not bachelorettes. They're Mounties.
I love the amount of respect that this show gave to Mounties. That was, you know, our team, they've played different types of cops and FBI agents and CSI and all these different American agencies.
Yeah.
So to give this respect to Mounties was really fun.
Mounties? What's the big deal? They're just cops on horses.
They're not just cops on horses. Royal Canadian Mounted Police Department is the most feared law enforcement in the entire world.
Single one of us is wanted by them.
It's funny because I don't know what it is, but like there's like this stereotype of like an alleged like softness that Canadian people have versus like Americans, or like American law enforcement versus like Canadian law enforcement. But I'm just saying, like, they're like the whole Dudley Do-Right joke and stuff. So I thought it was just so funny that they've been, you know, around some of the worst criminals and wanted by some of the highest forms of law enforcement. But the number one, Mounties don't forget a face.
Yeah. I love the way it all tied in. It just tied in so beautifully.
And it was hilarious, too. Like,
and it was so very, very funny. Yeah. It was really great. I think it being on a train was so interesting.
Yeah, because I mean, like, I don't know why I was this fantasy of like going across like on the train, but I realize now how long it takes to get places on the train.
Yeah. I think about how fun it would be to, you know, have a weekend on a train.
Like in a little, I've been on a train before. It was a little rocky. I don't know about all that.
I know that I take a short train, you know, within the city, and I'm like, oh, this is so long. So maybe I don't want to take a train.
Also, I wouldn't want to be on a train that has like batteries that actually don't work, like in the wall.
Right. Wild. We need to also, real quick, before we wrap up this discussion, talk about the Glenn Reader frame safe. Because the moment at the end where Parker is realizing that she didn't steal, there's nothing in the safe. She didn't steal anything from the safe. No one stole it. Like, there was no stealing. And she was disappointed.
But again, that's like, it's not, it's like the thrill of the hunt and the chase for her, you know?
Right.
She's like the animal that just kills for fun. Like, no, I'm not hungry, but you're dead. But I'm not hungry.
It's how a cat will play with an animal until it dies, and then they're like, well, now I'm bored.
But that she was so excited, though.
She was so excited. The final scene of them all at that picnic was just beautiful. I loved it.
I mean, the couple was good again, or in a better space and place, knowing that their land's not being
poisoned anymore
on purpose. I hope y'all went to the grocery store for that food.
Right.
Though. Hope y'all didn't take it.
Elliot got it. He made it. But speaking of, we still have so much more to talk about this episode. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. It's time for Kate's Easter Egg Corner. That's right. Kate Rorick, our co-showrunner, is helping us out discover all the Easter eggs we might have missed in this episode.
Episode 14, The Great Train Job, is obviously a reference to the Great Train Robbery, since we are robbing a train. The train was a mix of an actual train and CGI, and if you take a train and you shoot it one direction and then you shoot it another direction, it looks like a different train. We spent a lot of time at the Louisiana train station, and the farm that we were at was an actual real working farm.
And here is a quick chat with director Beth Riesgraf, a.k.a. Parker.
First of all, it's a very small moment. There's a transition where we're watching Sophie and all of a sudden she changes into her character.
Electric flight is an enemy.
Did you love it?
I made a note. I was like, I have to ask Beth about this.
Tell me about this. Yeah, well, okay. So first thing is, you know, there wasn't a practical train that we could actually shoot on in New Orleans. So you have to find a way to make a train look like another train that's two. We had two train cars that were practical, but we couldn't move the train. So there were a lot of obstacles, right? And then we had to make two cars look like an infinity amount, right? So then we built a train car on stage. So the private car and the connecting, like, party car we built on stage. And when I was breaking down the script and thinking about all these transitions, I didn't have a train to look at, right? So I was like, how am I going to do all this and make it look like one train? And so I worked with our production designer, Randall Groves, who's a genius. And really, it was us sitting down with little model train cars that he went and bought from a train store to model the public train that we actually had two cars of. And then we were like, okay, so we'll match the exterior of what those are to the one we built inside. So at least we'll know those are blue. It's all one train. You know, it's things like that. But the vestibules between the trains that actually connect them, you know, we didn't know how that was going to function. Like how, okay, she's entering one train and we could have her go into a closet or a bathroom and change and come out, like all those quick changes you've seen before. But I was like, that's not even going to exist on the set. Like, we're not going to have that. And I think it's more dynamic. It's faster. It's more dynamic. But the biggest issue was her changeover time. Mm. So you're like, well, we have all these other scenes when she's in her con look. And so we got to see her as Sophie for this quick second. And it's like, yep, that's what we're going to do. So, you know, it was like a lot of timing and figuring out with my amazing AD how to make that happen and what else can we be shooting while she's changing into her con look and all the things. But it really reminded me of old school train movies, you know, the black and whites where you're traveling along the exterior of the train and you see everything happening through the windows. And the concept wasn't new, you know, it's filmmakers have been doing stuff like that for a long time on trains, but I was so excited to have that little visual trick in there. I just thought it told the story in such a quick, fun way, you know.
Yeah, and it's so fun. As a viewer, I was just like, this is amazing. This is amazing. I was like, I gotta ask, this is amazing.
That was good. A really, really fun and like funny episode too. One of my favorite parts is when you hear the woohoo and I'm like, and I'm like, oh God, it's a bunch of girls, it's a bachelor party. Like, yeah. No, it's worse, is Mounties and they don't forget a face.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And it's so funny because we don't see a lot that gets to kind of shake our team up or like, you know, rattle them too much because like they keep it cool. But everyone was like, oh, hell no.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I can't go in there. They know my face. I cannot go in. And then, you know, our villain being on the wanted list for all of 3 seconds. And then, like, we know your face. Mm-hmm. Even though we were turning up in here, we don't forget a face. And boom, we're in Canada. So how about that?
Yeah, exactly. It was really funny to create this thing of these, like, fun-loving looking people to, like, no, they're the worst.
Yeah. And they're, like really, like, happy and jovial. And then in the States, you know, they have that cartoon Dudley Do-Right. So we just think of it like, oh, nice, never like Mounties are scary. And then I was like, maybe Mounties are kind of scary.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think you want to mess with them in real life, actually. So, yeah.
I want to talk about the specialty car of the train because, you know, that is where a lot of the action is happening and where the big reveals are. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about shooting on that and making that?
So from a Thursday or Friday to a Monday, that thing was up. Like, it's crazy how fast and amazing these crews are. So they built it. And once it was in there, you know, and I saw the lay of the land, I just was able to start blocking out scenes and really figuring out a lot of it. We had to block shoot, right? Which means, you guys know what that means. Yeah. So it's shooting everything from one side and then flipping around and doing the other side just for the sake of having to remove walls. And, you know, the logistics of shooting something like that with time and money, you know, you can only paint so much of the exterior of the train. You can only make so many panels removable. So all those decisions had to be made ahead of time. Like, which panel do you want to come off? Well, can we have the roof come off? Because I'd like to do a rail camera. Well, no, because that will take way too long to do. Mm. We won't have time for the setup. Okay, the scene where the wall gets broken with the axe, how much, where exactly is that going to be? And what panels need, because all of it has to be scored.
And you have to tell Elise, hey, you got to hit this specific
Don't
one
mess
here.
Up.
Don't mess up.
Don't hit the wrong part, please. We only have 3 of these. You get 3 times, 3 takes. So, yeah, but, you know, all that stuff was really, it's all prep, right? Mm-hmm. So having to prep without seeing the furniture in the space, without seeing how many bodies are going to be in this thing. Okay, we think we know. Okay, spacing wise. And then you're actually in there and it's like, okay, I hope this all works. The stuff we've laid out, and for the most part, it really did. And we had the freedom of, you know, Steadicam and some handheld stuff. And one of my favorite moments was, I have to say, the actors kicked ass. Like, everybody, with a show like this, if you show up unprepared, you can cost the whole day, right, for the director and everybody else. And so Gina and Elise had so much to shoot, so much dialogue, but time jumps, right? So we're shooting this one piece here. Okay, great. We're staying on this side. You're already lit for this other scene here. So now just jump to this mindset, to this next piece. We don't break and give her 10 minutes to go back and look at the script, right? She just comes and does it. So Gina was such a champ. And I remember at the end of the night, we still had the scene with her and Blake in the private car where he's trying to kind of seduce her and do the whole thing over the battery. And John Fletcher comes from a theater background, has done Broadway. Gina's done a ton of theater. And so we were talking about it, and it's like a dance, right? This moment. So how do we do this when we've got 30 minutes? Okay, you guys, while we're setting up, go just run it, run it, run it, run it. Gary Camp, our camera operator, he was game. He was excited. He's like, we can do this. So it's the last scene of the night, and I think front to back had an hour to get it, which is crazy. And so we go in, and it was a wonder. We did the whole, we ended up, they ran the whole thing in one go, and Gary effort, like the first take is the one I think we actually used. Oh, wow. And then we cut into coverage once they sit on the couch. But technically, we ended up shooting the whole thing in one go. And that was to the credit of these amazing actors who know how to run a scene all the way through, and they don't need to start and stop. And then Gary, you know, having that dance with them and practicing, and they were all just yes. Like, when you get people who say yes to creativity in that moment, it's just like a gift. And the same thing happened with Elise. She had a ton of dialogue in that train car, and it was a bunch of things that happened, and there was a lot of pressure on her, and it was hot, and, you know, we had a lot of green screen to, or blue screen to think about and all this stuff. And go, are you ready to run scenes 6 through 50? You ready to do this? She was like, huh? And then she's like, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. And she just went into a mode. And I'm telling you, it was like, okay, now jump up. They're going to throw some coffee stuff down, and we're going to act like this much time has passed. Okay, great. Da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, to her credit, she just crushed it. Like, she was such a pro. And thank God for her, because we wouldn't have made our night, I don't think, had she not been the one, you know, or had actors like her and Gina and everybody else. But especially in those train moments, it was a lot of pressure.
Tea, chamomile, lemon. Lemon.
I came up with the fantasy hair shakeout wasn't written, and I was like, we have to do it.
I loved that.
Yeah, because I was like, well, how would she feel about this person? And maybe it's fun to actually have this moment where she's tripped out. And my AD never looked at me like, you want to do a special shot of what? And I was like, this, just trust me. That'll be really fast. I've talked to her about it. Let's just do it. And thankfully it worked out. It was really fun.
It added to it, too. It added to that whole you feeling scared. It was giving me very much 90s rom-com.
Yeah.
Like, the girl's there. She's just so beautiful. Like, what do I say to such a beautiful angel, right?
And it takes some of the weight out of the episode, you know, in that moment. Because we're dealing with a lot of heavy stuff in this episode. And it's like, for that moment, you know, also keeping it a bit playful because she's young and has a crush on someone for the first time, and she's trying to process that. And so going into the fantasy of that for a second was
in the middle of a con. Like, in the middle of a con.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we wrap that episode with a, like, family dinner with this extended family with who I'm now referring to as Brianna's new girlfriend.
Yeah.
And the farmers and everybody. Mm-hmm. What was the decision about making this family dinner?
It was scripted that way. You know, Christine Boylan wrote the episode. She's amazing. She was a writer on the original Leverage as well. And she knows these characters and has such a great ability to just, you know, bring out all these amazing moments for the cast. But she also understands that it's a family, you know, at the end of the day. And I think it felt so great to end a show in that way. You know, it reminded me of when we used to shoot at the bar, and we'd all kind of be cheersing, or, you know, there was a moment in an Italian restaurant once. And those are great feel-good, end-of-show, you know, type of bringing it all together. And it was it's rare when you have everybody in the cast there. And that was really special and sweet. We haven't really done it like that before. Yeah. So that was something our genius writers came up with.
Mm-hmm. It was super satisfying to watch.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. Our crane had actually broke right before that shot. And I was like, oh, the sun's going down. The crane head broke. How are we going to get this? You know, you plan the whole day around your sundown shot. And so luckily, our camera team, they're just amazing. And they fixed it in time. And we pulled it off. And it was beautiful. But everybody pitched in on that moment. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we appreciate them pitching in because it really... It put a bow on it.
Mm-hmm.
It put a bow on it. And also a pin in something for Brianna, because, like, maybe later we'll see her. Obviously, there's a lot of character development, like, within herself that has to happen or will probably happen or really needs to happen, because you're young and you need to know who you are before you really link up with someone. Let's be honest. You really should try to know who you are before you get with someone, especially if it's really serious. Because, obviously... Yell has shipped this thing so hard.
Oh, this ship has sailed.
Seriously, some of you are like, well, yeah, she's going to know herself. And yeah. Maybe they could be like friends and then expand that. Because in this episode, Brianna does a thing that she's done through this last back half. Well, really all throughout the season, where she is very intuitive in knowing the good and the bad people. Like, this young lady, Emily, is just working for someone bad. She's not bad. She believes in what she's doing. She doesn't know that there's anything wrong and that there's something happening. And Brianna's like, open your eyes, girl. Mm-hmm. Let me bust this wall down so I can show you.
Yeah.
I only have 3 times to do it, but I can show you.
What's in here?
What's in here and what's really behind that? And she's done that several times now this season, and she's young, and I don't know if that's like I guess it's like just like an innate talent that she has, but I think it is something that grows and adds to her character overall, like in Leverage.
And I think it was a really nice moment for her character to meet somebody like her who hasn't always fit in, but who's wicked smart and knows, is so knowledgeable about all these other things that weren't maybe the cool thing to know when you're also into gaming and all these other ways. You know, it was such a nice moment of reality for her to find somebody that was like her, that was a little bit
the
quirky.
Best part, like, you want to see my drones?
Yeah.
That's her, though.
Yeah. And there's such a beautiful moment at the table when Brianna's championing her. Wow. Here we go. But for saying, like, hey, and I bet, you know, they relate about being women of color and how hard that is, and that your hard work should speak for itself, and it's not. And, you know, why is that? And let's fix that. And I love that we were able to talk about something like that, too, with these two amazingly talented women, you know. And there was a lot of conversations about their dialogue, their dynamic. They actually spent some time together offset to get to know each other, to try to create this cohesiveness, which I think they totally nailed. And yeah, they were both so thoughtful about everything and took it really seriously. You know, when there were moments that needed to land, they just really nailed it.
Yeah, because you're talking about different points of representation that are very important, that they're in, that they're both queer, that they're both, like you said, women of color.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Emily, like, you're in an industry and your boss doesn't look like you and doesn't think like you, and therefore he doesn't act like you and has the same moral compass. Now, I don't know if this ain't do with his color or not, but he just is not like you, and those are not his experiences. And I didn't even realize that was... Thank you, Beth. Director Beth Riesgraf, for helping me realize that.
Absolutely. You know, it was a big part of the arc. And, you know, I think the beautiful thing about this was, like, let's not focus on Brianna's got a crush on someone. Well, she's found someone she connects with. Mm-hmm. And I think, hopefully, by the end of it, you see this sweet moment of a kiss, you know, a quick peck. But we didn't linger on a big romantic kiss. It wasn't about that. It was about connection. She's so young. And it's like she's in a new group of people that are fighting for all the right things. She's trying to understand her place in this dynamic. And she's no longer alone. And then personally, she meets somebody to connect with who's also like her. So it's like expanding her world in many ways, I think, that moment. And it was really fun because Elise can really go there. And she's game. You know, she's game to just play and go there as well. But Ari was just fantastic, who played Emily, and she was just a great, I mean, that was her first job. on TV.
She'd never,
and she had one of the hardest sets and hardest days to come, and she just nailed it. Yeah, she was really amazing. She's a very talented person.
Well, if she leaves up to Yell, Yell will have her back on for every single
episode. I would love to have her back. She was
joining
so much
the team,
fun.
Guys.
Yeah, yeah, she was fantastic. I would love to actually mention Jeremy Hayes, too, who played one of the villains with the mustache. He plays Blake's henchman.
Time to pack up. We don't want your kind around here.
He is phenomenal. He's super talented. And
is that his mustache?
No.
What? I needed to...
Da-da-da!
Because you guys do a lot of times is take real elements from yourselves and just put it into your characters.
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe that's his mustache.
No, Mia Goff did an amazing job, or had makeup with finding that mustache. And, you know, the way that that stuff goes, you have to order it ahead of time. And a lot of times... you get a script a couple of days ahead of when you actually need the mustache.
Like, order in for like, I need a mustache with pointy ends. Yeah. Pointy. Don't, no
make
curls.
It a twirl.
Just, what did he have a twirl?
He had a little curl. Did he have a curl? Didn't he have a curl? Or the other guy? Now I'm forgetting.
It looked a little like he did the thing.
Oh, yeah. No. You're right. Yeah. And there were so many conversations about the length of facial hair, the length of the hair, the haircut photos. Like, there's so many decisions about all the stuff.
I didn't even realize it now, but his character's dress is even an homage to the whole genre of The Train and all of that. Because he, when I first saw him, I was like, what is he doing in our time dressed like that? But now I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. We based it off of real people, you know, and that culture of people who still dress like that. And also aesthetically kind of blending that into the style of The Train. That was Blake's aesthetic. And he's got this nostalgia for a certain period, and you know, we just combined it all.
B-I-N-G-O, it's time to play our favorite game here on the official Love Redemption After Show. A very distinctive game. Yo, you got it for him?
I do. Let's play bingo.
We have all aboard. Let's go steal a train. We see some drones on Brianna's tablet, and Elliot cooks for the farm. So we have Elliot cooking again if you missed it.
We got a chance to talk to Elise Shannon, you know, our favorite Brianna. So let's check that out.
I ship this so hard.
She ships the ships out of ships.
She ships the ships out of ships.
I do. Okay. I'm all in on this ship.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. Tell me everything.
Sheesh. I always heard that I was going to get a love interest, and I got one. And I mean, Ari's great. I mean, like, it was so funny. We went out to dinner and we were chatting it up, and she's just like somebody that I would kick it with in general. Like, that was cool. But the great train job is its own sort of, like, I was a strange episode dude, and Beth rocked it out. I mean, and Beth was so, like, caring about, like, the casting of, like, you know, this thing that, you know, is definitely my world and my taste and stuff like that. And she asked me so many questions, and I ship it. I'd ship. I mean, Brianna's so dumb when she's like preparing to, like, she's like, yeah, girl. You know what I mean? Like,
like the epitome of awkward, like
totally awkward. No, like, game.
I got these drones. Look at my drones.
Yeah, I know. No game. And that's what I think, if you were to ask me what I don't love about Brianna, is that she has zero game.
Oh. So you have more game than Brianna?
No. That's also what I hate about myself. No. No, but yeah, I wanted Brianna to be like this smooth talker, but it wasn't right. And
But that's something that could develop in time as she gets more secure in who she is, and
sure,
those things become more concrete, and as she continues on her road to redemption too, because just because she's young doesn't mean Brianna hasn't done some things. So that list was a little lengthy when it was all written down.
Maple syrup, dude. Maple syrup.
Yeah. I imagine she's going to learn her game skills. She's with a team who, like, aside from Parker, all of them have game.
Oh, tight game. I mean, Kane, like Elliot Spencer, just has to, like, look at somebody and they're like, oh, great. Yeah, that's what I want right now in my face. So, yeah, and then Sophie Devereaux is, like, amazing and smoky and smoldery. And Brianna will learn.
Yeah.
As she becomes better with the cons, too, in her acting. But the one thing I really love about Brown is that she is so good at picking up when someone is actually bad or just evil adjacent. Mm. And she so willingly will kind of not go against the team, but like break the con a little bit to try to save someone who she thinks is worthy of being saved. And I really love that about her character, that she has that gift to really look past and not just say, oh, are you with the evil? Oh, okay, I'm not separating you. Everyone's evil. And that's just that.
Yeah, Brianna's radar, yeah, you're right, is a bit different. And yeah, I think it just, it changes how, like, the tone of, like, what really is, what makes somebody worth saving? Like, what qualities does one of the characters have in it, or, you know, one of these evil people have in it that can really be pulled out? And Sophie's good at that, too. So I think Brianna learns a bit of that from Sophie, because Sophie will, I mean, she, just one look, and she's like, I got it. I know who needs to be over here, who needs to be, you know, have the piano fall on their head, and, you know, it's good, so.
Yeah, but we see, you know, we see Brianna do it not just in The Great Train Job, we see her do it in The Unwellness Job with Melanie. Mm-hmm. She, I think, I feel like she sees more than Sophie. Is that risque to say?
Ooh, no one sees more than Sophie. Maybe. I don't know. What makes you say that?
Well, because twice we see her see the assistant be like, no, they don't know. They're still good. And Sophie is like, actually, well, we'll see.
I predict that's something that we'll see strengthen as we manifest future episodes of this show.
Sure. Or at least like Brianna and Sophie getting on the same page as far as, because like I feel like there's so many moments where Sophie's looking at me like, what? Like, what are you? Why? And Brianna's looking at Sophie like, yeah, like, it's like, come on. And like, it would be cool for them to finally get like so discerning about all these things where it's just like a look like, yeah, we know what we're doing. Hopefully we'll get there. We'll see.
Oh, I imagine that it's season two. That's what we're seeing.
Bow, bow, bow. Knock them down.
You know, we talked a little bit about how you are a little sister in real life. And we know that Aldis is a big brother in real life. How has your relationship evolved over shooting this show?
Well, when I first got down to New Orleans, I mean, and I met Aldis. Aldis was like, take down my number. If you have anything that you need to ask me or whatever, like, I'm here for you. And I was like, oh, okay, you're real life big bruh. Like, I respect it. And I did. I called him up anytime. I was like, I don't know about this and I don't know about that. And he would just, I mean, on the phone for like 45 minutes. So, I mean, it was the best transition. And also, it's just so gracious of him to like come down to this show to just hand a baton off so that I'm not starting like, I mean, he came down for other reasons. He didn't just come for me. But it was gracious anyways that he passed that baton off. And I couldn't have asked for a better introduction. And he's been so open throughout the process. And yeah, it was definitely something that I needed, sort of that familial thing. It was funny, my mom was on FaceTime and I was like, hey mama, you know, I'm doing my thing. And this is when Aldis came around for a bit and he was shooting, and Aldis was like, who's that? And I was like, that's my mama. And he was like, oh, okay, so, you know, hey. And they met, and my mom was like, you take care of her. I was like, mama, this grown, he's a grown man, that's a celebrity, like, what you mean take care? And she was like, yeah, I know you're busy. She said something, she was like, I know you're busy, but you watch out, you make sure that, you know, if you need to, you know, check her, you check her. I was like, this is insanity. You're talking to Mr. Hodge this way, you know. But yeah, real life big brother, and his little sister is also brilliant, and he talks so highly of her, and she's like a genius as well. So I just feel really honored to be in that space, you know. Yeah, it's a great experience.
No, he literally sang your praises like episode one of the show. I was like, I'm really excited. Like, if I wasn't already excited to meet you, like, I'm really excited to meet you. Like,
yeah, and also, what a clown. Like, he is so funny. So I'm sitting there and he's like, yeah, you know, maybe we should just like banter a little bit, like, let's go back and forth, like, just pop some jokes off. I'm like, okay. Like, we went out to dinner with some other people and I was popping jokes off them because it's easy to be like, what are those? Well, like, look at them shoes, like, what are those, the Air Pinocchios? Like, you know, it's easy to be like that. But on set I was like, oh, I don't know if I have the jokes like that. But I mean, we were popping them off and I really missed sort of that energy moving on, but I have so much other stuff to focus on and get down as well. So I asked him, like, what do you type when you're, like, hacking on the show? He was like, oh, yeah. See, you don't want to know what I type. I was like, okay, fact, clown. Anyway.
That impression was pretty spot on, though.
It really was.
You don't know what I'm, you don't want to know what I type.
What do you type?
I type what he types. No.
Oh.
Because I definitely read in between the lines, and I was like, yeah, I'm typing that, too. Sometimes I just go like that, though, which is not great. Anyway.
Are you now a fast typer?
Look, I don't really do home row, but I think, like, Gen Z is just, like, faster. Well, no. Maybe not, because, like, back in the day, like, people was really typing 100 words per minute and then saying they typed 100 words per minute. Like, that was a thing.
There were
like,
tests.
How many that was on your resume. How many words per minute can you type? So I definitely think, like, thumb typing, I'm a kill. But, like, this typing, home row is, like, not my thing.
You guys sent in your questions, and now we have the opportunity to get the answers that you want. So it's time to answer some fan questions.
My first question is going to be for Aldous and Elise, and that is, do you think Hardison is ever going to finally make the earbuds waterproof, or is Brianna going to have to just come in and do it herself? My second question is for everyone, and that is, will we ever find out what's on page 42 of the Mastermind? And also, what do you personally think is on page 42? And my third question for everyone.
Slow down. You can pause there.
You can pause it.
I think Brianna's going to have to do it for him. And then also, because Hardison is just like, I feel like Brianna sort of wants to like, just kind of throw hands with her brother for once and be like, I can do it better than you. But Hardison, I don't think would ever let her do it. What's on page 42? I don't know. I don't know.
What was actually in the, when you guys had the Mastermind book, what was actually written?
Inside the actual book, JPD had literally sort of written a tale that like looked like what would be, I mean, went so far, like, just so that when we open this book, it's literally, like, summations or summaries of episodes that had already gone on and, like, sort of just, like, line notes of what happened in each episode. And it's, like, done so beautifully in chapters. So you're opening this thing, and I'm like, where was this book when I first started this job? You know what I mean? But, yeah, so it was beautifully done. I don't know what was on page 42. Because we were sort of just kind of flipping through it. There was so much.
My third question is also for everyone, and that is, if the crew is to go out to karaoke, what's everyone's go-to song?
Oh, okay. My go-to is probably Come On, Eileen, just because I can scream it. Come on, Eileen. Yeah, yeah. Or Valerie by Amy Winehouse. Or anything that's Whitney Houston.
Wow.
That's a solid karaoke pick right there, Whitney Houston. Yes.
So you're a big singer.
No.
Okay.
I want to be a big singer. Or I will do Left Eye's Rap in Waterfalls any day of the week.
You guys are some of the most talented and loyal fans. We're going to check out some really cool fan art from you guys right now.
The official Leverage Redemption After Show is part of the Electric Surge Network on Electric Now. We recommend checking out some of our other original content like Inglourious Trekspurts, The 430 Movie, and Best Movies Never Made. Finally, a very special thank you to Bill Ritter, Patrick Meany, and everyone at Electric Surge Network, our producers Natalie Michelli, and of course Dean Devlin, without whom this show would not be possible.
Thank you so much again to our incredible guests and to all the fans who submitted content for this episode. We love you. And if you want to keep up with us, of course, check us out at After Leverage. But until next time, I am Yael Teagle.
I'm Felicia Michelle.
And this has been a very distinctive podcast.